This is Jay Sekulo. The United States Congress passes a bill targeting individual terrorists.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulo Live. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulo.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the broadcast. Well, there's this kind of following up on what we were talking about yesterday. A piece of legislation that has passed now the House and the Senate. This legislation is a bill that imposes sanctions on the use of civilians as defenseless shields. And here's what happens. Hamas and Hezbollah notoriously are known for this. They will put a rocket launching device in a school with skilled school children, or in a hospital with patients, or in a town square where there are civilians. And why do they do this? Well, they know that there's not going to be a counterattack because no one wants to have the civilian casualties. So they use them as what's called human shields. You'll even see some within the Palestinian Authority use human shields. They need their own children to throw stones or use some kind of device that they almost like a slingshot to go after Israeli soldiers, and they have children in front of them, so no one's going to take any kind of retaliatory measure on the individual throwing a rock. By the way, rocket is the way they use it is a deadly force. But here's the problem: the solution, and I call this a barely a phase one solution, is the individual terrorists now, when once they're known, will be sanctioned as to any property they might have in the United States, and it specifically targets Hezbollah and Hamas. So that part is good. I don't think it goes far enough, because I think what you need to be doing is really targeting Hamas and Hezbollah in bank accounts and other things. Now, there's been some of that before, but at least it is a start in the right direction.
I think because Hamas and Hezbollah are both already identified as terrorist organizations by the United States, they are already subject to sanctions by the Treasury Department, because they are on the Treasury Department sanctions list. This is to start identifying the individuals in Hamas and Hezbollah. In fact, it gives the White House an opportunity. This was a bipartisan, unanimous piece of legislation. We don't get much of that these days. So Democrats and Republicans unanimously supported this to build a list over the next year of every terrorist from Hezbollah and Hamas who is involved in using human shields. And so I think specifically we could have not just this terror list of, oh, Hamas is a terror organization and Hezbollah is a terror organization, which we already have at the Treasury Department, but we can actually start building out lists of terrorists who can then no longer operate freely. And by the way, it also it lists a terrorist and the agencies or instrumentalities of a foreign state that is part of, again, these acts. So I do believe, though, of course, you can always go further against Hezbollah and Hamas to see their absolute destruction, which would be the goal, is to see these terror groups destroyed and it come to an end. To put individuals together, a list of individuals, because we know they operate in the shadows, and they operate in the shadows in the United States and in Europe and doing fundraising that way, making it more difficult for them and exposing who these individuals are that would put children and women who are typically used in this kind of harm's way, causing death. That's the people you see in the hospitals after Israel strikes back. There's a reason for that. They put the people in the arms depots. They put them around where the rockets are being launched from. They put kids around that. I mean, they put the kids out on the front lines, and this is, again, saying to those who finance this,
yep,
to those who organize this, we are now going to have a list of the people that do this.
Wes, what do you think?
Yeah, you know, Hamas is a terror group writ large. They're guilty not only of breaking international law by putting weapons and weapons factories and ammunition near civilian, places like hospitals and schools, but some of the citizens in Gaza who try to escape when there's a missile battery, for example, close to their house, Hamas will physically attack and intimidate them if they try to leave the area and not be a human shield. They are truly terroristic.
All right. I'll tell you what we're going to do here. We're going to take your calls on this and other topics as well. 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. Big move in one sense. Fan, it did pass unanimously. I guess that's the best part of it.
Yeah, anything unanimous on both sides is a good thing. And, Jay, we can talk about this more, but it's another tool in the presidential toolbox. That's been the problem before.
All right, we'll take your calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Don't forget the ACLJ's matching challenge at aclj.org.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
Hey, welcome back. So we've talked about a bill that is now passed the House and Senate, to be signed by the President, targeting individual terrorists responsible with Hezbollah and Hamas as it relates to utilizing human shields. I think it's a positive step. My concern with this always is Hezbollah and Hamas would not be labeled by the UN in a condemnation resolution. We talked about that yesterday. So the United States takes some individual action. So, Harry, that's good. My concern is, and I guess that what Jordan said is right, it will at least help in building a list of who these terrorists are. But the chances of them having assets in the United States are not likely.
Yes, I agree with that. I think this is a good first step. More needs to be done. Clearly, it's possible to look at this in terms of the context. The United States has sent funds to the Palestinian Authority.
Billions.
And we are now in the process of drawing down on those funds. In addition, the United States has announced that it is cutting back on support for the Pakistani government, which continues to shelter terrorists, including a terrorist who participated in the Mumbai bombing, killing 166 people, including 8 Americans. So this needs to be a sustained, comprehensive effort going forward. And so we should look at this particular bill in context. It's a good first step. More needs to be done.
So, then, what is the likelihood of other resolutions? I mean, between now and the end of the year, nothing's likely. We'll talk about the continuing resolution. But what? Anything else on this front on the near horizon?
Probably not too likely. There is some efforts to maybe counter some of the BDS, boycott, divest, and sanction experts against Israel. But on this particular measure, Jay, I do think we should say that it's an important tool in the presidential toolbox. And here's why I say that, because Congress has historically been very bad pushing back on this. I mean, Harry mentioned the fact that we're still funding the Palestinian Authority, even though they're in partnership with Hamas. That's an action that the Congress has failed to do. So I think Republicans and Democrats coming together and unanimously in both chambers, Jay, unanimously passing a resolution that gives the president, not Congress, gives the president authority, even if it doesn't go as far as we want it to combat the use of these human shields. I think that's a good thing. Also, Jay, one of the provisions in here.
Was this a compromise legislation thing, or was this the piece they thought, was this the piece that was put forward?
This was pretty much what was put forward. It originally passed in the House at the end of 2017. Actually, the Senate language was then passed and adopted by the House, but the differences were essentially nothing. It was basically just a technical changes, Jay. So it was unanimous in both chambers, and it gives that power to the president. I think that's a good thing.
Well, it's certainly better than nothing.
Yes, I will tell you this. In the new Congress, with the rise of the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez group and the Democrat Socialists. I don't think you're going to get unanimous support on condemning any kind of Hamas or Hezbollah anymore because they have been very reluctant. As Stanis said,
well,
Congress
like
has always
then they should push for those.
I think that's what will come out next, is to kind of see how this new group of Democrats, which is certainly not a mainstream, typical AIPAC-attending Democrat, but very much pro-Palestinian rallying Democrats, are going to act when this kind of legislation moves forward. So I think, for one, they wanted to get this done before that new group came through. Democrats as well, by the way.
Yep.
And two, we should see how they vote. I think it's very important to see how they vote. Let's take the calls that have come in on this as well. Bridget in Colorado on line one. Bridget, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Bridget.
Hi. I just wanted to know if this list is going to be shared across agencies and if they're going to be able to use those names to actually connect or make terrorist associations here in the United States.
Yeah, I think, it's from a data gathering standpoint, it'll be helpful because it can put people on terror watch lists. It can control any assets the individual terrorist has in the United States, although there's not likely to be much of that. Hezbollah and Hamas use front groups, so you know some of that is already done through the United States Department of the Treasury.
Yeah, I think what's important is that because we're not just naming these entities and maybe just their well-known leaders, any kind of visas or admissions for visas, you get on this list, you won't get that. So yeah, you're going to be cross-sharing this. Treasury will, of course, put this together with the White House because they handle sanctions. But then you're also going to be working with INS and all the other divisions and Border Patrol to make sure that anybody, I mean, they're even saying, now this is kind of telling to me, there's likely, they believe this, they wouldn't have put this in legislation if it wasn't true. They believe that there's likely people that will be named on this list that have current visas.
Right.
Because one of the provisions
think about
is
that for a
current
moment,
visas will be revoked. So your call is absolutely on point, that there are likely people inside the United States right now tied to these efforts enough that they would be tied to these human shield efforts that would then have their visas revoked, because that is one of the provisions here. It's not just to revoke future visas, but current visas as well. And I think that is important to note, that it was included. It wouldn't have just been included for no reason. It's included because that means there are people with visas out there,
yep,
to the United States, whether they're in the U.S. right now or not, who will no longer be able to get those visas, and they will have them revoked once the White House. And I like that the White House has been designated to really put together a list of Hezbollah and Hamas, yep, terrorists by name. Don't let them just hide behind
right.
The name.
It'll be interesting to see if the new Congress with the Democratic, yeah, Socialists, whether you're going to see any of this pass unanimously anymore. Stan, what do you think on that?
I think there's almost no chance. I mean, I think that's why this measure is worth doing. And yes, I think the revocation of visas is the most significant thing in here. You know, to Jordan's point about whether or not the next Congress will vote on these things, Jay, if that BDS measure that I mentioned does not get included in a year-end spending bill, which it looks like maybe it won't, it's still in play, that may be the test vote that Jordan's looking for. Because, you know, this is a measure that Democrats have talked about supporting, but they haven't actually had to go down to the well of the chambers and put their name yay or nay against it. So we might get a signal on these kind of issues very early in the next Congress. But Jay, my guess is these unanimous consent measures, these are done after, yep, this month.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. Let me ask one other thing, talking about resolutions. So border wall funding looks like not going to happen, and it looks like a continuing resolution.
That's what it's looking like. We don't have a firm statement from the White House on what they will do when a continuing resolution is sent over, but one has been introduced in the Senate to extend funding through February.
Do we know who introduced Who introduced it?
Mitch McConnell.
That was your son.
In the Senate.
Yep.
Yeah, although I got to tell you, that's got to pass the House still, so it looks like it will pass the Senate. I think that's an open question in the House still.
I think it's an open question for the American people. I mean,
yep.
This is now the president's looking at other alternatives, and I think that's smart. All right, yep. We're taking your calls, 1-800-684-3110. We also have other news, and that is Syria. The United States may well be preparing for a full withdrawal of its forces from Syria.
Yeah, the president tweeted this morning, and that kind of led to 8:30 this morning, led to a lot of the news coverage. He tweeted, "We have defeated ISIS in Syria. My only reason for being there during the Trump presidency." This goes back to 6 months ago when the president said he wants to eventually get the troops out of Syria once ISIS is defeated. Now there are all these reports about when will that happen? When are we pulling out all of our troops? There's been no definitive response. Some have said immediate. What does immediate mean from the Department of Defense? That could be months. That could mean a year.
Yeah.
I mean, it's thousands of troops, tens of thousands of troops. Yeah, that's important to know.
Yeah, there's about 2,000 troops. So, Wes, what are these I should say Colonel Smith when I talked to you about military matters. Of course, Colonel Smith is our senior military analyst. What are those troops doing?
Those troops are there.
How many do we have, first of all?
About 2,000,
yep,
in Syria. We have troops also in Iraq. But they're there to finish ISIS off, which there's still a few pockets of ISIS
left. Are they there with the approval of the Syrian government?
Oh, absolutely not.
Right.
Absolutely not. And the other thing,
people
though,
need to know that.
Yeah, and the other thing that's going on, they are there with the Syrian Democratic Forces, which are largely Kurdish.
Right.
Over the objections of Erdogan and Turkey, big right. time. But the SDF forces and the U.S. forces are co-located, which means they're in the same location together, to defeat ISIS. But also, they are training local militias to continue the fight against ISIS.
Has ISIS been pretty well defeated in Syria at this point?
Pretty well. There are pockets.
I mean, that's pretty impressive military move when you think about that from where we were just a year and a half ago.
And even though withdrawing the troops is controversial and some of the senators have come out against it, I think what it reflects is the president said as a campaigner when he was a candidate that he did not like long-term, open-ended military deployments, which I agree with totally. Yeah. There needs to be an objective, and when you reach that objective, you need to leave. Also, he's very, very popular with the rank and file of U.S. troops.
Yep.
They like him, but he cares about them. And I think part of what he's considering, and there's been no official announcement made, even though the media's picked up on it, I think he's trying to consider the welfare of these troops, their long-term deployments, and whether or not we have an end game, a strategy for exit once the mission is accomplished.
Yeah, Harry, how do you view, I mean, from looking from a policy standpoint, I can argue both sides. I mean, I could argue staying in there, as Lindsey Graham and Marco Rubio have said, and basically it is a stabilizing force. I can also say, I could also argue, what are we doing there after, if the objective was the defeat of ISIS, and if ISIS has been defeated and we have successfully trained the troops, why are we still engaging?
Absolutely, and you have to also consider the economic cost. I think this move raises a number of important questions. When will the U.S. actually move the troops out? What are the geopolitical implications? What signals have been received by both our allies and our enemies? And here I'm talking about our allies, the Kurds, and our enemies, Iran. And lastly, we can answer this question, I think, very quickly. Has ISIS been defeated? And largely the answer is an affirmative one in Syria. So there is a case to be made for removing our troops.
Yep, I think, like I said, you could argue both sides of this, and I think that's exactly what's going to happen. All right, we're taking your questions on all this. 1-800-684-3110. 1-800-684-3110. But don't forget our matching challenge campaign at the ACLJ.
Very critical time for the American Center for Law and Justice as we come to this year's end. We have that matching challenge where you can double your support for the ACLJ. What happens is you go online to aclj.org, you make an online donation. Let's say you make a $30 donation. That's what you're charged on your credit card is $30. We have a donor ready to match that $30 immediately. So your donation becomes $60 to ACLJ. Donate now, aclj.org.
It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
So we've got a couple issues we're hitting. One is a bill's passed the United States House and now the Senate targeting terrorists that are with Hezbollah and Hamas that use humans as shields. They will be not only put on a list, they will not only have visa restrictions or visa removals, but they will also have assets frozen. I think it's a decent first step, but I think you got to be, this of course, the United States is doing this. While the UN wouldn't put a resolution through condemning Hamas and Hezbollah, yet a majority of the members of the UN would do it. But remember, as we said yesterday in the broadcast, they did a little rule change right there at the end to make it a two-thirds vote instead of the precedent, which was for the 20 resolutions condemning Israel, they had a majority vote. We're also taking your calls on that, also on Syria. But I want to, this idea of troop withdrawal from Syria, I think it's important to get into that a little bit. And Wes, from a military standpoint, you've listed a lot of reasons why you think we should actually stay in Syria right now.
Yeah, I think there are more reasons to stay than there are to get out, although I appreciate the president caring about our troops. But Iran, Russia, and Syria, for the last several years, they have been very, very proactive about wanting to diminish not only the U.S. presence, but the U.S. influence there. And Iran has troops on the ground there, as does Russia. Our position has been up until now that we wanted Iran to remove their troops, not our troops, and this seems to be going against that. The president is against open-ended deployments.
Is the counter to that narrative, though, that you don't want to have you don't want your troops on the ground with Iranian troops and end up in a conflict? Because if you're going to deal with the Iranians, you want to deal with them in Tehran rather than Syria? I mean, that's going to be an argument.
We've done a good job of deconflicting the areas where the troops are stationed. The other thing, though,
I mean, remember, everybody needs to remember, we're not there with U.S. with Syrian approval, obviously.
Absolutely not. And that leads to the other two points, which I think are reasons to stay there. First of all, General Dunford, just 2 weeks ago, was talking about our mission there, not just to defeat ISIS. We are training the local troops to fight ISIS. And he said 2 weeks ago, they're only 20% trained.
But how does it look when you're occupying an area with military forces? I'm just playing both sides here.
Exactly.
You're occupying another country. You have military forces in another country without authority. We would consider that under the law of armed conflict a declaration of war.
It could be interpreted that way.
I mean, if the Syrians were to put your troops in Washington, D.C., it's a different situation. I understand that. But.
And Assad has made that claim. Yeah. On the other hand, it's not just the United States. It's a coalition of a number of countries, all of them members of the United Nations. Here's the most serious.
Was there a U.N. approval to do it? Do you remember? Athan, was there a U.N. approval for the troop allocations in Syria?
Believe so. I'd have to check, but I don't believe there was.
Theory was, or the theory of the Obama administration was, take troops to engage ISIS where they were, and then the president upped that by making sure we'd actually win the conflict.
Right. The real most serious issue I see, a ramification of removing our troops, though, has to do with our allies, the Syrian Democratic Forces, which are largely Kurdish. They have been our closest allies. They have been the most effective in defeating ISIS. Just in the last week, Turkey has demanded that we remove our troops from cooperation and co-location with the Kurdish forces, because Turkey sees all Kurds, whether they're PKK or not, sees them as a threat to their country and to their national security. We have thus far said no way. They are our allies. They are decent people. They're effective on the battlefield. They're anti-ISIS. They're anti-Assad, and we are sticking with them. If we summarily withdraw our troops, it will put the Kurds in this position. They will either have to face complete annihilation by Turkey, which is threatening an imminent attack, or they will have to reach an accommodation with Assad in order to survive. And that is not a good option either. And that will basically be the Kurds' only two options if we're not there to fight with them.
All right. We're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. Who's next?
Yeah, we do have calls coming in, too, about this legislation that just passed in Hezbollah and Hamas as well. And then, of course, we'll have calls coming in about this announcement in Syria and the defeat
and we'll open up for other
of
topics
ISIS
too.
At 1-800-684-3110. Phil's calling from New York Online, too. Phil, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Phil.
Thank you very much. Thanks for taking my call. It means a lot to me. I'm a fervent supporter of Israel. That's why I asked this question. Really is for the military analysts. I've heard a number of people say that if Hezbollah fired sufficiently many missiles simultaneously at Israel, it would overwhelm and defeat Israel's missile defense system.
Mm.
I'd like to hear what this gentleman has to say about that.
Yeah, it's possible. The thing about Israel...
I mean, they've done it, but I mean, let's put it in context, though. So. Hezbollah has done what I call raining missiles.
Yes.
In fact, I've been in the areas when they've done it.
Right.
And Israel was not overwhelmed.
No, the Iron Dome system is very, very effective.
Very effective.
What makes Israel's safety more precarious with Hezbollah? Of course, Hezbollah is backed, equipped, and funded by Iran. But what makes it so precarious now is that just in the recent months, Iran has shipped and shared technology for these missiles. And Hezbollah literally has thousands of rockets and missiles on the border with Israel. With this new technology provided by Iran, they're not going to be just lobbing missiles into Israel, which is what they've done heretofore. But with these sophisticated guidance systems, they will be able to target specific geographic locations in Israel. That is the biggest game changer recently about Hezbollah. But the Iron Dome system is effective. Again, that Israel has found four tunnels.
They say there may be as many as 12.
Yeah, and that's so that Hezbollah can send in ground troops, and they have a huge, huge standing army. So Israel's existential threat is from Hezbollah right now, which of course means it's a threat from Iran.
Well, that's what it is. I was going to say it's asymmetrical warfare in that regard, but it's Iran's the threat. They just use Hezbollah as a proxy.
Yes.
And that's really what it is. Okay. Let's go ahead and take another call at 800-684-3110. By the way, we'll take calls on other topics today, things that are on your mind. You can give us a call at 1-800-684-3110.
Jerry calling from Rhode Island on line 4. Jerry, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Jerry.
Hello, team. I was calling about the funding through UN Nations, but the discussion of Syria and General Dunford not thinking we should leave. Haven't heard if anybody comment on General Mattis, and it's clear Colonel West doesn't think we should leave. The tacticians who've seen this game go before, history tends to repeat itself. My concern now on the phone call while I was waiting is the Kurds are going to be left out there, and we know they're our biggest allies.
Is the
president listening to General Dunford? You know what he said with General Mattis?
Look, the president's getting multiple. I'm sure he's getting input from the Joint Chiefs. He's getting input from his field commanders. I think what the president, I'm not speaking for him here, but he looks at what was the mission of putting the troops in play. And it was the defeat of ISIS, because remember, ISIS was controlling large swath of territory in Syria. A year and a half ago, we were talking about how ISIS, unlike al-Qaeda, was operating as a nation state. And that has changed because of the president's plan. So then I think it's appropriate to at least reevaluate the necessity of keeping American troops there. I don't know if General Mattis has said anything specific yet.
He has not. And the president, he does listen to his military advisors. He truly does. And including his national security advisor, he's not willy-nilly about these decisions. The White House is saying that a final decision has not been made. Concerning General Mattis, though, he understands the chain of command. And even if he disagrees with the president, you're not likely to ever hear James Mattis disagree publicly with the president, because in the military, that's just not what we do.
Likely, I think what we've gotten today is the order to begin the plans for withdrawal. I mean, I think that's what it is, and how that will look. And if the plans are put forward that say, we're going to take this much time, that much time. By the way, I also don't think this will prevent the U.S. from keeping our Navy right at Syria, aimed at Damascus if necessary, so that if any of those humanitarian attacks occur that cross that red line, those chemical weapons attacks. Remember, the president was, unlike President Obama, was willing to attack Assad directly after that chemical weapons attacks. I don't think that stops either. I'm not saying we're not going to have any troops in the region or the Navy in the region either, which is a very effective tool as well at preventing those civilian attacks.
All right, we're taking your calls, 1-800-684-3110. Also, if you're not getting the full hour of the broadcast, hop on over to Facebook or Periscope or ACLJ.org. Good way to get the program. Don't forget the matching challenge campaign at ACLJ.org. We'll be back on air in just a minute.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's matching challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
All right, so we got multiple topics we're discussing. We're discussing a resolution that passed the House and Senate unanimous consent. Maybe, by the way, the last time we see that. Condemning the use of by Hamas and Hezbollah of human shields, targeting individual terrorists who are encouraging their use with cancellation of visas, which is hard to believe these people would even have visas, but evidently they do, some of them, putting them on watch lists and getting assets of theirs held in the United States with economic sanctions. The president is also considering pulling out of Syria. There's 2,000 U.S. troops there. His feeling is that the goal of the mission was the eradication of ISIS. That has in large part happened, so there's a lot of talk about that. Then there's the pending government shutdown. Is there going to be a government shutdown, or is there going to be a border wall? So we're talking about all those issues. Plus, I'm going to open up the topics to you. You get to ask us the topic you want, things that may be on your mind that we're not talking about right now that you have a question on. You could talk to us. We got a couple lines open at 1-800-684-3110, 1-800-684-3110. I want to go to Harry and kind of get everybody's opinion. Going into the holidays here, let's assume that they come up with either a continuing resolution, that issue's off the table. What do you see as the biggest issue coming up in the Congress? I'll tell you what mine is at the end of this little discussion, because you can imagine what I think it's going to be. But what do you think's the largest, what do you think the big issues are going to be going forward?
I share the concern that many American people share with respect to our long-term approach to immigration, border security, and the like. So there are a number of issues that percolate around immigration and border security, including funding the wall, improving security, but also there are individuals who overstay their visas. We also have to deal with, I think, those individuals who have come to the United States illegally, and they are now benefiting from DACA. Can we deal with that issue in a long-term way that advances the United States and advances the economy and also advances our security in the world?
All so, right. Wes, what do you think the upcoming issue is going to be?
You know, I agree with Harry. I think it's going to be comprehensive immigration reform, which is not likely to happen, and the border wall. I wrote a piece that goes up on our website today about the border wall, because it is not only a political issue, it's a national security issue, and it is a moral issue, and there seems to be no consensus, but I think that issue is going to continue to haunt us.
Let me go up to Than, then I'll go to Jordan, then I'll go. Go, Than.
Well, I'll just say more broadly, national security. I don't disagree with Harry and Wes about the border security issue. I think that's definitely a component of it, but I think you're going to have to zoom out a little bit and look at hostility across the world to Israel. I think national security, generally speaking, and probably with more focus on the international front, is going to be the most important issue.
Okay. Yeah. Jordan?
Well, what I would like to see is infrastructure. I think that could be bipartisan. What I think we will mostly see is investigations by the House committees on President Trump and oversight of the White House, document requests, subpoenas, et cetera, and that is where they will be spending most of their time for the next 2 years. Not only it's 2 years until the next election, but 2 years you're going to be seeing a lot of Adam Schiff leading committee chairs and Jerry Nadler.
Elijah Cummings already saying he's sending letters to I saw one article said he
sent
document
request
to the president's private lawyers. He said he was sending it about the president. I haven't seen those, by the way. I don't know what, you know. Maybe they're on their way, but I think they're going to be on their way. Look, I think they're going to do oversight. Now, the other thing I don't think they're going to do. I mean, I'm hard pressed to see them utilizing something that would be more dramatic than oversight. I'm just going to leave it at that, because that did not work out very well for the Republicans. And I think what Lindsey Graham said is, take it from him. He's been there and done that. Doesn't work out so good. All right, we're taking your calls on a variety of issues. 800-684-3110, 1-800-684-3110. Let me encourage you, though, also to support the work of the ACLJ. We are a matching challenge. We're less than 2 weeks to go to the end of the year. Hard to believe, but there it is. And we could sure use your support.
That's right. And right now at the ACLJ's website, aclj.org, we have a matching challenge where you can double the impact of your donation. What does that mean? If you go online right now at aclj.org and you make a $15 donation, that is what you're charged on your credit card. We have a donor ready to match that $15. Now, use all these different numbers because they all matter. They add up very quickly. So if that donor matches your $15, it's effectively become a $30 donation to the ACLJ. Very important. So every amount matters. No amount is too small. Donate today. Your gift is effectively doubled by our matching challenge at aclj.org. We need your financial support, and this is the time to donate. aclj.org.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble.
We're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. And again, your support of the ACLJ critical right now in our matching challenge campaign at aclj.org. We're opening up our topics a little bit. We've been talking about Syria. We've been talking about the UN yesterday. We just talked about kind of the issues that look like what they're going to be ahead. And we want to take your calls and comments as well at 1-800-684-3110. Let's go ahead and take a call.
Yeah, Tyler in Idaho with an interesting question on line one. Tyler, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hello.
Hey, Tyler.
Because the Kurds have been such a good ally to the United States, is there a possibility before President Trump leaves office that he will vocally support an independent Kurdistan?
Yeah, interesting question. There's been a lot of dialogue on that in many administrations, and it's fraught with there's a fraught with political ramifications on that.
Yeah. I mean, early on, during the Trump transition, one of his advisors on the Kurdistan issue, specifically in Iraq, made a statement. I haven't seen anything else since then, that if Iraq were not to stand in the way, so if Iraq were to agree to an independent Kurdistan, which would mean some of Iraq, what is now under Iraqi territory or sovereignty, being given over to the Kurds, which is disputed land, but that the U.S. would not stand in the way of that, that the U.S. would support an independent state for Kurds, but it would have to be a deal between Iraq and the Kurds. And, of course, we were just talking about the break. Western Iraq is about to have its elections, and lots of things can change there.
Right. The Iraqi elections are coming up. Iran has tried to influence these elections and is doing a pretty good job of doing that. Their leading candidate to be prime minister has declared he wants all U.S. presence out of Iraq, which certainly will hurt our influence in the region, too, and our ability to respond. Concerning Kurdistan, though, after World War One, the nations that are in that region were sort of formed arbitrarily, and Iraq was formed after World War One, and they totally ignored the tribal differences. You had Shias, you had Sunnis, you had Kurds, and they put them all in one country. The Kurds have never been happy with that. It's not likely that Iraq would allow them to form a separate nation. They have given them some semi-autonomous, you know, status right now. But there are so many oil reserves in northern Iraq with the Kurds, they're not going to let that go. The other thing, though, that would really be a showstopper, and I wish they could have their own country, is that they're on the border with Turkey, and Turkey sees them as an arch enemy, and they would absolutely howl and jump up and down if there was an independent Kurdistan.
Could impact NATO. I mean, there's a whole host of things, it could affect. David on Periscope asked an interesting question. Is the bipartisan bill, the one targeting Hamas and Hezbollah with sanctions, a signal, Harry, that Congress can actually work together in tandem with the administration?
I think it is. I mean, I think it's also important to note that the law that was passed can be broken down into two components. So it can, the bill will have long-term implications because there are mandatory sanctions and permissive sanctions. But yes, in response to the caller's question, Congress could, if it would put the American people first, work on a bipartisan basis to advance the nation. However, as we all know, that's a rarity in American history. And given the current, let's say, composition of the incoming Congress, it's difficult to foresee because I think many people in Congress—
laughing. I see Than laughing in the remote camera.
They are animated by one thing, and it's simply the Trump derangement syndrome.
Yeah, so Than, where are we on bipartisan? I mean, what about an infrastructure bill, for instance? Could that get there?
Infrastructure, maybe. I was chuckling, Jay, because I think the passage of this bill signals that there was a very narrow window to act in this range, and that's probably not why it's not as sweeping as you and I would have liked. I think a bill like this, and certainly one that goes further, is probably dead on arrival in the next Congress. I hope I'm wrong, by the way, because I know the Trump administration is willing to work with Nancy Pelosi on these issues if they would be willing to. I'm just not sure. On an issue like infrastructure, where you know the base of the Democrat Party, and I shouldn't really call it the base, I think maybe the fringe of the Democrat Party would not be so opposed to it. I do think there's an opportunity there. In fact, if you want to talk about what I think is most likely legislatively as opposed to what I think is the most important, I think infrastructure along with investigations is certainly at the very top of that list. I wouldn't say it's as important as national security, but Jay, I do think there's going to be some cooperation there.
Yeah, well, we're going to find out soon enough, I think, is reality. As new Congress starts. Let's go ahead and take another call. 1-800. By the way, taking your calls on a variety of topics and things that we haven't talked about, we're open to talking with you. 1-800-684-3110. What's next?
Yeah, let's go to William in New Jersey on line two. William, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Hi, William. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. Hey, Jay, everybody. Thanks for your ministry, guys.
Sure.
I had actually two quick questions. One is, do our military leaders believe that the Kurds are equipped enough to hold the ground that we've already won over there by both blood and gold, most importantly, the blood of our soldiers that have died fighting to exterminate ISIS there? Do our military leaders actually believe the Kurds are equipped enough to hold that ground? Should we pull out? And second,
Let's go with your first one, and then we'll come back to you, William, for a second. Colonel Smith.
Absolutely not, because their real threat is not to hold the ground in Syria that they've taken from Assad. The real threat is that Turkey will attack them forthwith, and they will be decimated by Turkey. And then if they're also fighting Assad, that there's no chance. They are brave, and they're courageous, and they're pretty savvy when it comes to military stuff. But absence our presence there, they would be in a precarious position and could not hold the ground.
Yeah, so that's and I think that's right. Go ahead.
And I think we're questioning holding the ground against who. So in the one sense, it's holding the ground against, so ISIS right now being defeated. Are you holding the ground against the Assad regime? I don't think the Kurds would take that battle on. They'd probably just let the Assad regime remain in control so long as the Assad regime wasn't coming after them, which was kind of how things were.
Right.
They were okay with that. Remember, they were kind of treated like the Christian minority in Syria, which has been fairly protected by the Assad regime, as atrocious as that regime has been. So I don't see them trying to take a battle there. It would be these other entities. What is Russia doing? What is Iran doing through the Revolutionary Guard and Hezbollah? Or, as we've seen more recently, Hezbollah has been also kind of moving back into Lebanon, preparing for maybe conflict with Israel. So it looks like maybe Iran is pulling more resources out of Syria as well, as ISIS has been defeated, because their main goal was to keep Assad in power. It appears that will be the case. So then I go to the Russians. Will the Russians get their warm water port, or is the deal been made that this is such a mess that they keep their port, whatever, but we're going to, again, kind of go back to a status quo with Assad in power and ISIS defeated. And that could be the case.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's a horrible, because of how confusing this one was with all the different parties. You had Al-Qaeda groups involved, ISIS groups involved, Shia terror groups involved. Hezbollah looks like they have moved into Lebanon, back into Lebanon. So if Iran is moving out and Russia is kind of happy with the status quo, and you've got ISIS defeated, and where do you need to then focus on ISIS? Well, you still need to focus on these the ISIS diaspora, if you will. And France is a great example of that. Those who are ISIS-inspired terrorists, that has not stopped. And it was a reminder that Christmas market terror attack in Strasbourg, France, the headquarters of our European Center for Law and Justice. That threat from ISIS is not over yet.
Yeah.
But ISIS as a governing body, as a group that controls land and territory, has been defeated.
Yeah, I think that's right. All right, William, you had another question.
Yeah, Jay. What's disturbing to me is what's going around is that Hillary Clinton may run in 2020. I mean, I find that so hard to digest, considering all that's been exposed with her.
I don't know. She could. I mean, when I say I don't know, there's going to be a lot of people running for the Democratic Party.
As a conservative, I would welcome that. Let me just put that. If she were the leading candidate, I don't have to.
The leading candidate right now is Joe Biden. Actually, is what they're saying.
By like percentages of 2 points, you know, it's like Beto O'Rourke, who lost in Texas, comes in the top three. What's interesting is Elizabeth Warren, who has 80% name ID in that Iowa poll, came in at like 8%.
I don't think she's running.
So
who knows? I mean, it could be somebody you're not even thinking about right now. I think in the next 6 months you're going to have a better idea.
Someone fairly dynamic. Yeah, I've heard a lot of celebrities, names put out. It's like the only way to kind of challenge the Trump celebrity that comes with being Donald Trump is to put up someone more similar to that, who is maybe outside of politics completely, who has a significant name ID but not political baggage. And the other baggage they have is just kind of like Hollywood baggage that people obviously were not concerned with President Trump having. Again, I mean, you hear a lot of names coming out there. People talk about people like Tom Hanks. They talk about others that would have massive.
People talk about George Clooney.
Yeah. George, mass appeal.
What are you hearing in Washington, Than, on that?
I think the Democrat field is going to make the 2016 Republican field look small by comparison. And on the question of Hillary Clinton, as of now, she is running, Jay. I mean, we don't have any official exploratory committees or official campaigns. But I will tell you this. If she saw a path to the presidency and she's the only one that has to be convinced of that, she'd be running.
You think she will run?
I think she's trying to. Yes.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to see what do you think the Democratic reaction is going to be to that?
They still control a lot of the apparatus. A lot of the apparatus is controlled by the Clintons. A lot of the money is controlled by the
Clintons. How do you think it'd be between, we only got 30 seconds here, between Biden and
Joe Biden Clinton? Has never been successful he's run for president 3 times. He's always lost.
Never gotten the nomination. All right. Why don't we make the last segment political? You got political questions for us? Some of you do. 1-800-684-3110. 800-684-3110. I know. The exploratories will start in weeks. 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. We'll take your calls when we come back. Don't forget ACLJ.org for a matching challenge campaign. Back with more in a moment.
It's a historic move. Now the United States has moved its embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, Israel's true capital. The state of Israel and its very right to exist is a linchpin issue not only in the Middle East, but represents a critical issue to the world at large. Israel is facing unprecedented challenges. Enemies abound. ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran all pledge to wipe Israel from the face of the earth. In his new book, New York Times bestselling author Jay Sekulow presents a powerful political and historical rationale for the existence of Israel as a sovereign nation. Jerusalem, a biblical and historical case for the Jewish capital, presents clear, irrefutable evidence to remove any doubt about Israel's right to exist. And the book dispels legal myths purported by Israel's enemies. Get your copy today, Jerusalem, a Biblical and Historical Case for the Jewish Capital. Available now at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Right, it's kind of an unusual segment for us. We're going to let you do a topic on anything. We usually save that for Fridays, but we're going to do it today. 1-800-684-3110. You want to talk to us, you give us a call. We've actually had some good comments coming on Facebook and Periscope as well. Let's go ahead and take a call, and then we're going to do some Periscope comments and Facebook.
Yeah, let's go to Christine in Arizona on the border wall and some of these alternative fundings that have been discussed. Christine, I'm sure you know about it well because living in Arizona. Welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. You're on the air.
Thank you. Christine.
Yep. My question is it true that $10 billion is supposed to be earmarked for Central America for security for us in some way? And if that's true, why isn't that money going toward the wall instead and providing our own people security?
So Amy on Facebook had the exact same question. Could foreign aid to Central American countries be reapportioned, reappropriated for the wall?
So when Congress appropriates money to the executive branch, the executive branch does have leeway in how it is spent and the kind of the timeline of how it's spent, but it is more difficult than just saying, okay, we've got $10 billion that was supposed to go here that Congress has appropriated, and now we've got it in our account, but we're going to spend it here. So you've got to have a direct tie. Now, I think that you can make some direct ties through, as President Trump said, a number of different agencies. So you could look at maybe getting a billion of that $10 billion and saying, because it's involving Central America, and these are mostly Central American immigrants, that part of that. Okay, so maybe a billion can be siphoned off of that that wouldn't then affect the congressional, what has been given by Congress and appropriated to the executive branch. But you cannot take all $10 billion because that would then be in direct conflict with what was actually appropriated by Congress. And it would set up a battle on appropriations that's unnecessary.
Here's the truth, and we'll let West address this in a minute, and I got a policy question for Harry and one for Ben. But here's the truth. The truth of the matter is the $25 billion for the wall could be reallocated in about 30 minutes if you just wanted to make some simple reallocations. And you and me, the American people, and frankly our allies, would really not know the difference.
Yeah. There are billions and billions and billions of dollars that are spent in all kinds of places the American people, they're not even aware of. Some of them are really insignificant, unimportant. But again, it goes back to what Jordan is saying. How do you appropriate it, you know, without...
You mentioned Afghanistan.
Well, yeah, Afghanistan, we're spending, counting our troops there and aid we give them, about $2 billion a month. We know that
there's the whole wall.
Yeah. In 6 months, you could pay for the wall. Or actually, in 1 year, you could pay for the wall. But Afghanistan, the government is corrupt. It's ineffective. We went there. Our mission in Afghanistan was twofold: to find and kill Osama bin Laden and to defeat Al-Qaeda. Both of those happened years ago. We're not fighting Al-Qaeda and ISIS as much there as we're fighting the Taliban, which has been there forever. And so, yeah, if we would withdraw from Afghanistan, that's probably the country that the president should look at withdrawing from. Yeah. We can still monitor by satellite terrorist training camps, attack them by air, and save a couple of billion dollars a month.
What do you think, Harry?
Well, I think that's precisely correct. It's important to note that the federal spending budget for 2019 is $1.4 trillion. And so if we compare $5 billion to $1.4 trillion, it's a minuscule amount, less than 1/100 of 1% of the budget. But yet Congress lacks the will to do anything about border security. And I think this is a bipartisan failure that has gone on for decades, unfortunately.
Yeah, Fan. Your sense.
Well, I think Jordan's explanation is the one that people really need to pay attention here, because look, the dollar amount is actually not the most important thing being negotiated here. One of the offers that was on the table this week, it appears, Jay, was that the Republicans would accept Chuck Schumer's offer for $1.3 or $1.6 billion, but they had to lift a prohibition that had been in place in previous years for the construction of new border wall. Yes, Jay, that's literally in the bills that Congress passes out. Here, Mr. President, you can have X amount of money, but you cannot use it for a physical structure along the border. That is a compromise that I think could work. Quite frankly, the Democrats weren't interested in that because this is a political game for them. But look, as we go forward, maybe that's a compromise that would be on the table.
Yeah, I think, again, let's take more of your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110, because we get more questions about
that. You asked about the, by the way, you asked, Jordan, about
politics.
How far are we away from caucuses?
Oh, yeah, just to remind people. Now, remember, on the Republican side, yes, there may be a challenger to President Trump in the primary.
Not likely anything of significance.
There will be a Republican primary, but it's really important on the Democrat side. So the Democrats, the Iowa caucus is in February of 2020. And the California moved its primary up to March, so its actual official primary is up to March 3rd.
You're talking about a year and a couple of months.
411 days to the Iowa caucus.
Yeah, I mean,
you're talking about 440 days to the first
15
primary.
15 months. You're going to be in caucus time. It's hard to believe that.
So you'll be in full political campaign mode in
a year.
Remember, it's 400 days till people start voting. So you're going to be in full campaign mode a couple
January,
hundred days.
Yeah.
Well, they will start forming their committees next month.
Yeah. You'll find out who's running pretty soon, I think.
At least the exploratory committees, yeah.
So if Hillary Clinton was going to jump back in, Harry, when do you think she'd have to do it?
Well, I think she could probably wait later than some of the
others
because she has some control and influence within the Democratic Party. And I think there's an internal fight ongoing between the Democratic National Committees and the state parties already. But she is very, very influential. And I don't think she lacks for hubris, notwithstanding her failures in the past. But I also think it would probably be a mistake for the Democrats to go in that direction. But notwithstanding that possibility, they could certainly move down that direction. But I think you're right. They're more likely to choose from a different group of candidates.
It's an interesting dynamic then, because if you're looking at it from the Democratic Party standpoint and how they would kind of move this thing forward, it's going to be a fight between this progressive wing, the Bernie Sanders, and now the younger ones. There's the whole group of them, and the more mainstream Democratic Party, which Hillary Clinton represents, and I think probably Kamala Harris and Cory Booker. Who do you think the Democratic nominee, the leading candidates for it, will be? Who do you think
I guess you would have to say the leading candidate is Joe Biden right now, but if you gave me a chance to pick Joe Biden or the field, I would absolutely predict that it would be the field, Jay. I mean, look, there's going to be 47 Democrat senators in the United States Senate next year, and I think about 40 of them are trying to run for president. And quite frankly, that's probably the scenario where Hillary Clinton has a chance, where one nominee doesn't emerge, and then she tries to come in.
Yep. All right, let's go ahead and take another.
Yeah, final call of the day. Tony in Texas on line 3. Tony, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, thank you, and God bless y'all for all that y'all do.
Thank you.
My question is, if the federal government decides they don't want to give what Trump wants, can the border states, such as Texas, where I live, say, hey, we're going to do it ourselves?
That's an interesting question. Could a state authorize it? And I think the Supreme Court says on immigration matters, it's the federal government. Plus, the states don't have those kind of resources.
No, the states don't have those kind of resources. Number two, the states do not have control over international borders.
Right.
Over our sovereign borders. They do. I mean, you would have maybe go like inland a few miles, but that would start carving up your own state and causing a lot of trouble. No, it's the federal government's job and duty to protect us and to secure our borders.
Yep.
It is not the states. It's not their duty. It's not your job as a state taxpayer or the state of Texas or any other border state. It's not your job or duty. It's your federal government's job to protect you.
All right, don't forget the matching challenge campaign of the ACLJ. Very, very important.
Yeah, ACLJ.org right now. Let me explain it again for everybody, because people sometimes do get confused. What does this matching challenge mean? Am I getting charged twice? No. You donate whatever amount you want at ACLJ.org. Let's say you donated $100 right now, ACLJ.org. We have a donor that is ready to match that $100 right now, so you've effectively donated $200 to the ACLJ, doubling the impact of your donation. Donate today at ACLJ.org's matching challenge.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's matching challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at ACLJ